That's Spooky Science Sisters PSA. You let your freak flag fly. You do whatever it is that you want to do. But if you want to have some freaky vampire sex and drink some blood, get all the important tests. Be safe.
I'm Paige.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Spooky Science Sisters.
I'm Eliza, and I need you to listen to me. Have you ever felt so much that you don't know where to put it all? And you wonder if anyone would notice if you screamed? Because you want to. Scream for the ones they've hurt, the ones they've taken. Scream for yourself. These are my words, my story from my perspective. Because I know you'll hear other versions. Because I want you to have a chance to believe mine. Or at least hear it. If you're getting this, it's already over. But if one of you listens, really listens, it won't be for nothing.
Hello, I'm Megan.
And I'm Paige.
And you're listening to Spooky Science Sisters, a podcast where we present to you a science-based and probably very giggly discussion on all things strange and unusual.
In this episode, we're going to talk to you about the science of vampires. Before we get to today's topic, however, we wanted to remind you to send us your spooky stories for a special listener stories episode that we will be releasing for Halloween in October.
We're looking for stories of scary experiences you had that ended up having an ordinary explanation, or that you'd like for us to try to debunk. If you have one, please email us at spookysciencesisters, all one word, at gmail.com, or contact us on one of our social media accounts.
And with that, it's time for something spooky. So, Megan, did anything spooky happen to you in the last 2 weeks?
No.
Great. That's great.
I've been thinking about it this whole time, and it was like literally nothing. The only thing that was like mildly spooky was that I got out all of my Halloween decorations because I'm a nightmare, and I just like, whatever. It's September, but I don't care. I'm getting them out. But I put on like lights and a strand of lights and some leaves on our banisters. And like one night they were on and I was like, I have no memory of turning those on, but also possibly they're on a timer that I don't know about. Cause they're like a battery pack. So you have to like either turn them on, but like they also have a somewhat mysterious timer setting. So it's like possible that I press that and then they came back on as like part of whatever 24-hour cycle they're in. But yeah, that was the only thing that I was like, sort of spooky. Like
a little spooky
that they came on potentially by themselves. But
I mean,
but nothing else.
The real question is, did they come on again, like a different time by themselves?
No, like they have not, just the one so far. So maybe that does make it spooky.
Yeah, I think it's kind of spooky.
Yeah, but it is like, it's, I think most people would argue very spooky in my house right now because I've got all my Halloween stuff out. But to me, it's just like, this is ultimate cozy time. We finally got fall temperatures and it's just like, oh, this is the best.
Nothing better.
Nothing better. Okay. Did anything spooky happen to you?
No, not really. It's getting kind of boring over here, actually. the only thing which like isn't really spooky, but I've been watching Ozark. And if you listeners have not watched it yet, you must. It is a great show. But I've been having like pretty consistent nightmares that the cartel is coming after me.
Oh no.
So that's a little spooky.
That is spooky.
I think that's really all that I've got.
Yeah. That's funny because I've like I've also had some pretty vivid dreams lately. Like, not scary ones, just like ones that I really remember. But here's one that I forgot to tell you about that is relevant to the podcast. I like had a dream that some people wanted to, I think, like add us to their podcast network or like something like that. Very, very fancy, the dream. But there was like some sort of like money involved, and I was like very excited. And like for some reason, you were at my house, but you were like in the backyard, and you came in, and I was trying to like tell you about it. And the people were there for the meeting about it. And I was so like unclear why you wouldn't have also been at this meeting and why you were in my backyard. But you were like very drunk. So I was like trying to get you to focus on like, okay.
like giant Moscow mule drunk.
Yeah, like giant Moscow mule. So I don't know. I don't know what my subconscious was trying to tell me there, but yeah, maybe I have some anxiety that you're going to abandon me on the podcast.
We're going to have some like big life-changing meeting and I'm going to show up wasted.
You're going to show up wasted. So yeah, so that's my story for you.
A friend of mine, and we can cut this if you want, but a friend of mine asked me the other day if we ever made it to like going on tour, if we would want to. God. And I was like, oh God, I never thought about that.
Oh no, we're going on fucking tour, Paige. You need to get your shit together. That's the goal. Famous podcast people listening with lots of money, sponsor us.
I promise not to show up drunk to the meeting.
I promise to show up drunk to the meeting. I'll show up drunk to every show if that's how we get to that point. But listeners, I gotta do it. You can help us by sharing. You can help us by giving us a rating on iTunes. You can help us by leaving us a review. So if you want to see drunk Megan and maybe drunk Paige on stage someday, you got to do your part. Okay. It's vampire time.
I am excited.
Okay. You have the notes on what a vampire is. I'm just going to chime in with some thoughts because I have a lot of thoughts about vampires.
I know, listeners. You're as surprised as I am. Megan has a lot of thoughts.
Also, I was thinking about it and I like a lot of vampire things.
That's because vampires are pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's just because we've gone through sort of a phase where vampires were very popular in pop culture, but I've latched on to like basically every one of those stories. So yeah. So I fucking read, yeah, you can judge me all you want, listeners, but like I read all the Twilight books. I just got my copy of Midnight Sun.
Oh, you got it?
Oh, I got it. And I'm going to fucking read that. I was very into True Blood. What else? What else have I liked?
Well, we're reading A Discovery of Witches.
Discovery of Witches, yes. Did you finish book two yet?
I am like halfway through it.
Okay. And we'll talk more about pop culture stuff later. But I'm just very excited. So I have watched and read and enjoyed a lot of vampire fiction stories. So this is an exciting topic.
This is an exciting time, people.
This is very exciting. Okay, go. Tell me about vampires, Paige.
All right. The Oxford English Dictionary dates the first appearance of the English word vampire as vampire in English from 1734. So vampires have been around for a really long time. The folklore for what we know now as the vampire came exclusively, though, from early 18th century Southeastern Europe. Vampires, similar to Boogeyman or when we talked about Bigfoot, exist in really every culture, but they're very different in every culture as well. There is one thing that most modern day vampires have in common, though, and that's that they are all creatures that subsist by feeding on the vital essence, or generally known as like blood. And they use like a protruding fang to feed off of a living being. Commonly, vampires were once a human who, after being bitten by a vampire, died and then rose from the grave as a monster.
A monster. I'm feeling very slap happy this evening, so I'm sorry. So that appearance in 1734 coincides with the timing of a report that was issued about a possible vampire who came from Serbia. So this is information that I got from an article called Vampires and Medical Science by Mary Halab? Halab? We don't know.
I would have said in Halab.
Halab? That's probably right.
I don't know.
But this is from a legit journal. So thank goodness I work in academia, so got access to that bad boy. But in a journal called the Journal of Popular Culture. And in the early 1700s, there was a man named Arnold Paul. And I was like, that's a very English name for somebody who was like from Serbia. So I read in another thing, it was actually Arnold Paoli. So I think it's just the anglicized version of his name. But anyway, so he's in Serbia, so Eastern Europe, and was suspected of being a vampire. So people thought that he was rising up out of his grave and attacking people. And he had actually claimed to have had some sort of encounter with a vampire earlier in his life. So he gets exhumed, he gets dug up and examined by this surgeon named Johannes Fluckinger, which, like, that is a mouthful.
That is an incredible name.
Or Johannes. It's probably Johannes Fluckinger.
Fluckinger.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's anyway.
That's a curse word.
That's I'm gonna replace curse words with his last name. But he examines the body and concludes that Arnold Paul was a vampire. So he issues this report in 1732, so just a couple years before the word shows up in the Oxford English Dictionary, and confirms that Paul was a vampire and rising from his grave, and talks about the stories. But this report went, whatever the 18th century version of viral was. And people sort of freaked out about it.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Some article blows up today that, like, oh, there's a real vampire.
Yeah. But today, I mean, that happens all the time. And we just think, oh, that's tabloids, right? Or that's bullshit.
Well, sure. But I don't know.
Yeah.
If it were, like, the real deal.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Fake news, man.
That's fair. Even if it were real, we would just click past it.
Oh, good God. The world is a nightmare. Okay. Anyway, so, you know, this report goes 18th century viral, and it's but over the next, like, few decades or couple decades, scientists and sort of budding medical science, as well as the church, they reject the idea of vampires and say that they're myth, they're superstition. So the point here is that vampires being a real thing is not so much, was never widely believed in Western European culture. So despite showing up, you know, a while ago was never widely believed. And I don't really know if that's the case for other cultures. Okay. So
I'm sorry. I'm just like, so they basically were like, yes, this guy's a vampire, but everyone was basically just like fake news. And that's what happened.
It was over like the next few decades where I think, you know, medical science sort of actually started to become a thing, and just science in general started to, and logical thinking started to become more of a thing. So people just sort of, yeah, dismissed it as being superstition or being a myth. So people didn't actually believe that there were vampires for the most part. So, but I think in like Slavic cultures and some other cultures, you know, they very much believed in their existence.
Yeah.
So talking specifically sort of about Western European and, you know, English people. But, all right. So vampires initially get very popular from this report. And I think like a lot of stories that I looked at, you know, sort of attribute the modern day vampire to Bram Stoker writing Dracula in 1897. But it's actually this physician named Dr. John Polidori, who was Lord Byron's, who's a famous poet, his personal physician, who hung out with Lord Byron and Mary and Percy Shelley in the summer of 1816. So he was part of the bet that they all made, like on who could write the best scary story. So it's when she writes, when Mary Shelley writes Frankenstein, and this John Polidori guy writes a story called The Vampire.
Huh. I don't think I knew that that was all off of a bet.
Yeah, it was like, okay, yeah. So it's really cool. So I love the story. Despite not loving the book Frankenstein when I had to read it, which I know is sort of takes away from my spooky cred, but I did not love that story. But yeah, they had to bet on like who could write the scariest story. So the summer of 1816 was actually known as the year without a summer. So it was in England, it was like super rainy and chilly. In the US, in New England, we actually had snow in June and freezing temperatures in July. And so you had like failed crops, people couldn't grow things, there were disease outbreaks. And it's because the year before in 1815, there was this huge eruption of a volcano in Indonesia called Tambora, and it cooled down the earth by several degrees for a couple years after. So we were in this volcanic winter, which is essentially the same thing as a nuclear winter, but it's where you have sulfate aerosols in the stratosphere that are blocking sunlight. And so it cools the earth down. So it was just like really shitty and rainy. And they're spending this very cold summer together. And yeah, they come up with this idea to have a spooky story writing contest. And that's where we get Frankenstein from.
It hits so many of your interests all at once.
I know. It's like literally if you could combine. Yeah. It's perfect. I love the origin story for Frankenstein more than I like the actual book of Frankenstein. But yeah, so back to vampires. So John Polidori writes The Vampire, although I guess like, I don't know, I guess they didn't really like him. So they were sort of like fake friends. And initially the story when it was published was attributed to Byron. But that gets fixed. Byron says, no, I didn't write it. And importantly, the point here, it becomes this foundation for what we now know as the vampire. So like the modern day interpretation of the vampire as handsome and suave and sophisticated, but also, you know, with this undercurrent of badness. And I guess like Lord Byron and this John Polidori guy did not really get along that well. So a lot of people think that Lord Byron was the model for the vampire lead character, Lord Ruthven, So sort of sounds like John Polidori was like, maybe not a, like he wanted to be a poet, but he was not great. And so they maybe weren't super nice to him.
Sad.
It was just like, it was just in reading about it, I was like, this is some drama. This is some early 1800s drama. Okay, but I tell you all this because A, I love that these spooky stories got written because of a big volcano erupting, and B, because everybody's like, oh, the modern day vampire comes from Dracula, and it's like, nope, it was perceived of like almost 70 years earlier by this John Polidori guy. Okay, so wrapping around, I know this is a very long thing, but I was very excited, and this article was this article was so cool. That Vampires and Medical Science article in the Journal of Popular Culture. But her point is that, or well, one of the points she makes is that there's like this just weird link between like vampires and doctors, or like vampires and medical science. So, you know, it's two doctors, right? It's this guy, Johannes Fleckinger, and then later, John, that's how you have to say the name, John Polidori, who writes the original, you know, vampire fantasy novel called The Vampire, who are both doctors who bring us Western society's idea of what the vampire represents. And this like blending of medical science and vampirism has continued to be important in popular culture representations. And that's sort of like the crux of that paper that I read. So, and I didn't even realize that in Dracula, which I've never read it and I've never seen the movie.
Neither
so
again,
my spooky cred is going down. I'm sorry, everybody. But I didn't realize that Van Helsing, that character, is supposed to also be a doctor. And like the whole point is like sort of, she says it's like this unresolved battle between science and the occult, rationality and superstition. And then it's that like Van Helsing is a doctor, but he like advocates that you could explain vampirism through medical science, but like scientists are too close-minded. And I was like, so he's just like the original Zach Bagans. I mean, right?
Oof. Yeah, basically.
Right. Or like every ghost hunter that we've ever talked about. Yes. So yeah. And then also Dracula draws from a lot of characteristics are drawn from Slavic folklore, which again matches this introduction by into Western culture from this report that Fleckinger wrote about Arnold Paul and the Serbian vampire. It's crazy. And then there are modern day pop culture representations that like still link vampires and doctors. So Carlisle Cullen in Twilight is a doctor, and then Matthew Claremont in Discovery of Witches is also a doctor.
Ooh.
So I don't know. It's just sort of like a weird, it's like a weird blending. And I think, I don't know, I spent so much time on it and I thought it was so interesting because a lot of what we'll talk about when we talk about, I guess, the scientific side of it and like where vampire folklore or the idea of vampires might have come from is like basically just a misunderstanding of important things about medical science and like death and decomposition and all that, you know?
Yeah, I never even thought about that. Were there any doctors in True Blood? Vampire doctors in True
there
Blood?
There were not. I was trying to remember if there was like anybody in that, and there's not. So, no. Yeah. But there's certainly folklore that shows up in other things. So I learned today, which I thought it was really funny. So we mentioned Twilight. We mentioned Discovery of Witches, which, I mean, just plug, because it should be more popular. it's really absurd to me.
It's really good.
Discovery of Witches is, which just might not mean that much to Paige or potentially even other people, but it's like if Twilight and Outlander had a baby. So it's like much smarter than Twilight and like much more, I don't know, much less childish for sure. But it's really good. The books are really good. The show is really good. It needs to be more widely watched. Okay, talked about that. We mentioned True Blood. I don't think there's any doctors. I am super fond of What We Do in the Shadows, both the movie and the TV show, but I don't think there's any doctors. Sesame Street, though, I thought it was really funny that you put that on there because there are, and I forget what culture they come from, but there are legends where, like, if you encounter a certain type of vampire, you have to spill, I think it's like they say to spill beans or like spill grains of rice or something, because they have a compulsion to count things. So like you'll have a chance to get away and escape, because if you like spill all this rice or like spill this sack of beans or whatever on the ground, they will like compulsively have to like count them and pick them all up. So like that's where the count from Sesame Street comes from.
Why do you know this?
Because I listened to the Folklore podcast episode on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what you do in your free time. Well, I mean, I do, but
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you just decided to look up Sesame Street.
Although, to be fair, I think I had actually heard the counting thing at some point in the past, but I never actually connected it to Sesame Street. But it was just this weird thing where it was like, oh, I too knew that the count had this like legit folklore
that
background.
Is so funny.
Yeah.
I had never heard that before.
And I don't remember what cultures they say that it is, but it was, I thought that was really funny.
Spill beans on the floor. Huh. Now I know.
Beans are grains of rice. I forget which one it was, or if it was like different, a couple different cultures and one was beans and one was grains of rice. But either way, if you run into a vampire, maybe worth it to just like chuck some rice on the ground.
What about Legos?
Compulsively counting Legos.
I don't know.
Could work.
Could work.
I don't know.
All right. And I think as far as like other vampire characteristics, Twilight, Discovery of Witches, even True Blood are, you know, all pretty similar in that they're, you know, strong and live forever, and like you said earlier, there are these like suave characters, pale skin, all that's pretty similar between them. So I kind of just wanted to point that out. And I don't know if any of our listeners have ever played the game Oblivion, but in that game you can become a vampire, which is infuriating because I once was turned into a vampire and I got stuck somewhere. Have I told you about this?
You're not.
I got stuck somewhere and I had to pick a lock to get into a building, but I'd broken all of like my picks and the sun was coming out, but I was like almost dead and I accidentally saved it. So I could never get any further. And I just like rage quit the game. I was like, fuck this game. This is bullshit. So frustrated. But basically, I just wanted to point out that in that game, it's the same kind of thing. As a vampire, you know, you start as a human so that you actually, or you start as a different type of character, and then you can turn into a vampire. And when that happens, your skin will become like a pale gray, eyes turn red. You get the sharpened canine, so you get your fangs. And then you even get, like, some additional skills. So, like, you are faster and you get your strength is higher and you get inherent invisibility and charm powers. You're immortal. You can't be killed through starvation or old age. But then you're also weak to fire. or sunlight at advanced stages, which is where I was at when I got stuck on this porch and couldn't ever get off because every time the sun would come out, I would just die. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about any other vampire stuff in pop culture, but I just kind of wanted to mention those things.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, yeah, the pop culture, the popular fiction version of the vampire, I mean, it differs, but it's pretty consistent and like has been for a long time. But yeah, superhuman strength, being very charming and attractive. In a lot of cases is like, there sounded like there was folklore stuff where like a lot of times there was like some sort of sexual encounter or whatever that would frequently happen with, you know, whatever vampire you were talking about. So unclear why that was the thing. I did think, like, say what you will about Twilight, I like did think that their explanations for some of the vampire things and like, you know, which ones were bullshit or like which ones were exaggerated were sort of clever, you know, like the sparkling was pretty stupid to see on film, but like it was a good explanation for like, yeah, that would definitely tip people off that you were not normal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I sort of felt that way reading it. But then when you see it on screen, it kind of ruins it.
Yeah. Yeah, you see it on screen and you're like,
This is stupid.
This is really dumb.
Well, I feel a sudden urge to tell the world about the Twilight fight.
The Twilight fight?
Yeah.
Oh, with Elliot, where he wouldn't go. You're going to get in trouble.
I won't tell everybody. Just ignore that. Nothing happened.
Nothing happened. They never had a major fight because Elliot wouldn't go see the Twilight movie with us.
No, that would have never happened.
yeah, I so distinctly remember that.
Everybody does.
Okay, so yeah, that's sort of where do the vampire legends come from, what are their characteristics. Paige and I really love vampire pop culture, so we got a lot to say about that. Let's chit chat about what the heck is actually going on here.
What's going on here?
What's happening?
Yeah, so I can go ahead and start. So I read a KQED article by Jennifer Huber called The Science Behind Vampire Myths. And in that article, she discusses Paul Barber's book Vampires, Burial, and Death, which I now want to read. And in that article, I got a couple good quotes from it, but basically Paul says that the belief in real vampires comes from people who are trying to understand and explain the process of death and decomposition. And one of the quotes from that article is, "People expected a body in the ground to decompose as quickly as one exposed to the elements. So they suspected why can't I say that word either? So they suspect it. I always want to say vampirism is the problem.
Oh, okay.
So they suspected vampirism when a cadaver looked unexpectedly well-preserved, bloated as though gorged with blood or blood on the lips. But corpses naturally swell as gases from decomposition accumulate in the body, squeezing the lungs and forcing blood to ooze from the nose and mouth. In addition, the skin and gums contract to expose the teeth more prominently, making the canine teeth look perhaps a little bit like fangs."
Yep. People don't understand what happens to bodies.
Right. So basically, it's just people not understanding that, like, bodies, what they do when they decompose, A.
Right.
And B, like, they decompose differently based off of the elements that they're exposed to.
Right. And that's pretty much what I would expect for like a lot of folklore stuff, is that it's just an explanation before science was able to catch up and actually explain what was going on.
Right.
So I read a different article from Scientific American, and this was called A Natural History of Vampires, and it was by Eric Michael Johnson. But it also references work by this Paul Barber guy. And I have a couple quotes and some information from this, because it talked a little bit more specifically about decomposition and it being slower than people expected. So the idea here is that in basically every case, and in that original Johannes Flickinger, God Flickinger. Damn it. So fun to say, and I said it wrong. So even in that original report that hits Western Europe, they dug up the body to look at it and to check if it was a vampire. So it's people that have already been buried in most cases. They dig them up and they check their condition to see if they're a vampire. And like Paige said, you know, they're looking for evidence of a lack of decomposition. They're looking for blood around their mouth and nose. Paige Benson mentioned that their teeth would look like they had fangs, or even saw mentioned like it made it look like their nails were growing. So,
you know, actually,
so go ahead.
Can I cut in real quick?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Something that I think is only true in True Blood, unless I'm just totally forgetting it elsewhere, okay, is in True Blood, when they are turning someone into a vampire, they drain them of their blood and then they bury them. And like,
yes,
that night in the ground is what like changes them officially or transitions them. And if they don't bury them, they don't change, right?
They drain them of their blood, they bury them, and then I think the creator has to be buried with them.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the baby vampire wakes up, they have to drink their creator's blood, I think.
So is that the only, at least, story that you can think of, or like movie or whatever that you've seen or read where they bury
them? Discovery of Witches
them?
Makes it sound like it was similar. But I don't know if everybody in True Blood got buried, though, did they? Because there's the part where they show Bill becoming a vampire, and isn't he just like laying in bed at What's-Her-Face's house?
And then it's been so long, I can remember a couple of them, and I remember Jessica.
Yeah. Well, I do remember burial was really important, but that is,
yeah,
like also really important in the folklore and in the old stories of vampires. So these articles got very gross because it was all about decomposition and what happens to your body. And I was just thinking, this is definitely why I'm getting cremated. But so it says that at the surface, putrefaction, which is just a great word, but I think it just means like decomposition or rotting, starts to happen at about 50 degrees Fahrenheit and is the fastest at temperatures of 70 to 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And I think above that, you start to just sort of dry out and become a weird mummy. But if you go just a few feet underground, temperatures are much cooler and decomposition happens about 8 times more slowly than it does at the surface. So that's significantly slower. And if you think about some of these stories, and I think they were talking specifically about the Arnold Paul one in this case, if it's winter time and, you know, they buried somebody in January, it would not be that surprising that if they dug them up, even like a few weeks or a few months later, they'd probably be pretty well preserved. So, yes, gross. And the blood that they see around the supposed vampire's mouth is, and I think, I can't remember if you said this. Yes, ew. Gases from decomposition accumulate in the body, squeezing the lungs and forcing blood to ooze from the nose and mouth. But yeah, basically, like as they decompose, your lungs fill up with gross fluid, your brain liquefies, and it can like all leak out your mouth and nose.
That's how you get vampires.
So, yeah, then they dig you up and they think, huh, this person has some fresh blood on their mouth. And I think in a lot of cases they said, you know, as you bloat or as you decompose, it could also be like your gums and stuff are pulling back and your nail beds are pulling back and shrinking, and so it makes it look like your teeth are turning into fangs or your nails are growing. Nasty.
Beautiful. if I go before you, will you dig me out and tell everyone I'm a vampire?
Yes. Although I Thanks. Did just listen to a You Might Love This podcast from our friends Max and Cassie episode. They just released one a week or two ago about, I think it's called Marilyn Loves Cemeteries. Mm-hmm. And they talk about now they have these like eco burial sites that you can yes. be buried in.
That's what I'm doing. Like, I wanted to become a tree.
Yeah, like you're like buried in the ground and you like naturally decompose. There's like a bunch of trees and it's like a nature preserve. And I was like, that sounds really nice. Like, I thought maybe cremated, but like, I could do eco burial site. That's the way to go.
Feed the trees.
Yeah. She also talked about some sort of weird burial thing, which was maybe in New Orleans or where it was, but they basically like put a body in and then it would like slowly liquefy and drain out, and they would collect that and just like store the small amount of stuff.
I've heard of this before.
That's nasty.
I mean
it's good because you take up less space, and then right. I think they just like grind up the bones and, you know, you either get them back or they, I don't know, do something with them. But
soupy.
That's weird. You turn into, yeah, just like rotting soup. Look at a lot of weird stuff this week for this episode.
Is this okay. soup? Nope. Don't eat that.
Don't eat that. Okay. Tell me about diseases, Paige.
Well, I don't think we're quite to diseases. We're to some diseases, kind of. Okay. So another thing that Paul Barber talks about is
good old Polly B.
Polly B. Shout out to Polly B. he says that when there would be tuberculosis outbreaks, that people would frequently blame the first victim of the disease, believing them to be a vampire. And so they would go back and dig up the body from that person. And I guess to prove maybe that this person was a vampire, they would drive a stake, or just, I guess, to kill them, drive a stake through that person's heart. And oftentimes people felt that they were then justified in believing that they were a vampire, because corpses that are bloated will often accumulate, like when they're bloated, they've accumulated a bunch of gases. And when you basically poke a hole in them, it's like a balloon, the gases start to escape the body, and it produces this like moan or this groan like sound as it's forced past like the vocal cords and out the throat. And like, apparently even without staking or, you know, puncturing some sort of hole, a lot of corpses will make that moaning sound anyway, which I don't think I ever want to hear.
That's funny, because I was just going to say, like, how fucked up is it if I Google if there's a YouTube video of this?
Okay, fine. Let's do it.
I was like, I doubt there's any recordings of them like staking somebody to make this sound, but like maybe
just the sound.
Maybe I want to hear it. Yeah. So this was a whole other thing that from the folklore podcast. It's really good, where he talked about vampire folklore, and there was like all sorts of stuff about them staking people and where you drive the stake through and how it all works. But a lot of it was people basically taking preventative measures. So it wasn't even just people that they I think it was people that they suspected of being vampires, but I think just more generally, there were some cultures where they would just, you know, stake people down or like set up some sort of stake booby trap situation. So that way, like, if the person rose from the dead, they would get staked and they would stay in their grave.
Okay, so it's not like a witch situation where they're staking people because they think they're vampires. And then, like, you're just screwed even if you aren't. It's they were sitting there waiting for a vampire to arrive and then they were just, like, instantly going to kill them.
Like, they're not staking live people. They're staking the corpses to either get rid of somebody who they actually think is a vampire, or they're just suspicious.
Can you imagine, like, you've heard some of the stories, even recently, where, like, people are almost buried or, like, have been accidentally buried alive, and, like, you're just trying to get out. And boom.
Well, that's a big thing is that, well, so we're going to talk about that in a second.
No, well, here I am laughing and it's not a laughing matter.
Paige, bitch. First though, so tuberculosis, which I thought was interesting, is did they say it's because like people will cough up blood, so they think that people are drinking blood, or like why tuberculosis specifically?
I didn't see that in the article that I read. Yeah, I guess I don't know. It does say that the outbreaks were typically associated. So I don't really know. That's a good question.
Good job, gold star.
Good question.
I gotta clap like my daughter does. She's like really good at I need to we all need to take a page out of her book, because she will do something that she knows that we like put something away or like, you know, do something, and she'll just start clapping for herself. And it's like, you know what? You celebrate you, you know? Okay. So the tuberculosis thing I thought was interesting. I saw in another article that a study published by Juan Gomez Alonso in the journal Neurology that argued that a lot of the attributes of vampires are pretty similar to physical symptoms that we associate with rabies. So he was saying that, okay, you've got these villagers in olden times who are living in very rural areas and would have had greater interaction with wolves, and some of those wolves would have been rabid. So it sort of makes sense that they would have really like had this fear of coming in contact with infected animals, with animal bites, coming in contact with infected blood. And it's also notable that in early Slavic folklore, there was no distinction made between vampires and what we would now call werewolves. So sometimes a vampire was just like what they called a werewolf that had died. So it sort of adds credence to this idea that like maybe it was just people with rabies. Or just like sort of came out of a fear of like rabid animals and and that kind of behavior. Yes. So
Before you go to the next thing. I quickly looked up, because I needed to know, why people thought that vampires and tuberculosis were like related.
Oh, okay.
And in part, it was because, like you said, that people would cough up blood, also because their skin would turn like ashen, and sometimes people would die like a super slow death, and people saw that as like it sucking the life out of them. But also it was at a time where like people really weren't able to explain very well why certain diseases were infectious and how they spread, and so some villagers believed that people who were dying of tuberculosis were preying upon their living family members, and like,
oh no,
yeah, basically like getting them sick because they didn't understand how their family members were all sick and like nobody else near them was.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So scary. That's kind of sad, huh? And scary.
Yeah.
People just thought that like people were attacking their families.
Not great. Okay. So another big vampire characteristic is that they rise from the dead, right? We're digging people up and we're saying that people are coming out of their graves and attacking other people or whatever. But it's in, I guess, records of like early medical science or early in the 18th century. There was a lot of debate about, as we're moving from, you know, more, I guess, religious slash folkloric view of the world to a more science-based one, there's all this debate about when does death actually occur, or when does the soul actually leave the body? And so you combine this with the fact that you're in a time where you've got, you know, a lot of epidemics. You know, we don't have vaccines or anything. There's epidemics, there's plagues, and a lot of kind of superstition behind infection behind infectiousness of them, but also a lot of regulations to prevent other people from getting sick, where they wanted to collect and, you know, securely bury these people as quickly as possible to avoid getting other people sick. But that meant that there were actually real people who got accidentally buried alive.
It's not so funny. It isn't.
Yeah, so like some of the ideas were, you know, they'd open up people's coffins and they'd see evidence that they'd been moving around, or like scratch marks on the inside of them, was that maybe they were like trying to get out because they'd actually been buried alive.
This right here is, we say this every episode, fucking scarier than vampires being real. Like, the thought that I could be buried alive is far scarier to me than somebody with like super long teeth that can suck my blood.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah. Although another thing, so I don't know, because I've heard stories to that effect, but then I also heard, I got so much information from the Folklore podcast, but it was so good. So you guys go listen to their episodes on vampires. They're much more serious than us. But so, but he sort of said that some of that is maybe a misunderstanding. Like, yes, people maybe got buried alive, but if you actually did, you probably wouldn't last long enough to like do all this stuff inside your coffin. Like, it's not like you were hanging out in there for a while. Like, you'd run out of oxygen pretty quickly. So
is that supposed to make me feel better?
No, it's not. I felt like it was going to at the beginning of that, and then I realized like it doesn't make it less scary. It just means that, you know,
you die
the idea
a little faster.
That they were like, yeah. Huh. But I think it was like, I think in there have been lore podcast episodes where God, I listen to a lot of things about death.
You do listen to a lot of podcasts.
I know. Well, and I've been bouncing around so much lately because there's just so many interesting ones out there. But he, in that show, talks about that people would like build in little things to their coffins, like just in case they got buried alive. Like, there are some graves that you can go to where there are like bells attached to a string on the gravestone.
Oh, I've heard about that too.
Yeah, because like the idea was like, if you got buried alive, you could wake up and ring the bell and then they would come dig you up and get
you. But like, based off of what you just said, I would already be dead by the time you got me out anyway.
Well, I don't know if there were any stories as to like whether or not that actually saved anybody.
I'm gonna look that up. That's what I need to know. Because if it did, I'm putting a goddamn bell on my thing when I die.
This is really, yeah.
It's scary.
What?
I
know, but you're not gonna. You're not gonna get buried alive. They now have things that can scan your brain waves and stuff. They know. Although I guess if you got kidnapped by a scary murderer and then they buried you alive,
do you think they would offer me a bell?
No.
I request a bell, please. Oh, no problem.
Although that would be like a pretty good like fucked up horror movie thing. Like, oh, I'm giving you a bell just in case anybody happens to be walking through this very remote wood, but it's like, you know that it's futile because nobody's coming for you.
Ooh, we should make this movie. Anybody out there?
Anybody?
We've got a new
world's
idea.
Greatest screenwriter is right here. Okay. More right. Gross stuff. It's time.
So, yeah, we talked about tuberculosis.
This is mean. I shouldn't say gross stuff because this is like a legit disease. So, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, people who have the disease. I don't think you're gross.
Maybe we'll just take that out. So, we've already talked a little bit about tuberculosis and how a lot of this is just a misunderstanding of how decomposition works. But now I want to talk a little bit more about just how people have kind of misunderstood how some diseases spread or how certain diseases work. I don't know.
Well, or just not recognizing that something is a disease.
And yeah, like not understanding the
supernatural
symptoms.
Thing that's happening to them. I mean, it's the same with demonic possession and stuff. Like, people didn't know that schizophrenia and I don't know, whatever that crazy one that they thought Annalisa McCall might have had.
Yeah, so just like not understanding what the symptoms are or not right. Understanding what the symptoms mean. So the main one that I think we're both going to touch on is a group of disorders called porphyria. It's actually also known as the vampire disease because it's widely been misunderstood as someone being a vampire. Basically, this group of disorders just means that you have too much what's called porphyrin in your body. Porphyrins are rings that consist of carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen. And heme, which is a component of hemoglobin, is an iron-containing porphyrin. So basically, what happens is there are these enzymes that can slow down or almost stop the production of heme. And so if heme isn't produced, you've got all these porphyrins that are missing their iron that are just kind of floating around. There's an excess amount in your body and they're not really doing anything for you. And they can eventually start affecting things like your skin, your gastrointestinal, and your nervous system. So that's generally what this group of disorders is, or kind of why it does what it does. The most common of the porphyria disorders is cutaneous porphyria, and this is the one that a lot of times is mistaken for vampirism. So the reason is it's got symptoms like sensitivity to the sun or artificial light. It can actually even cause a burning pain on your skin when you're in sunlight. Sudden painful skin redness, blisters on exposed skin, fragile thin skin, and skin that can change in color. And then excess porphyrin can also build up in the gums, causing a red or brown discoloration, which we already talked about a little bit.
And I had also read that it makes your pee turn really dark red. So that was part of the reason that people might have thought that people with porphyria were drinking blood, because their urine was really dark red as well.
Gotcha.
Although I did also read that there were potentially some physicians that recommended that people drink blood, but like specifically they're talking about animal blood in order to help with the disease. So they must have recognized on some level that it was like some sort of blood disorder.
Interesting.
But, yeah. But I also learned that there are like weirdos. I'm sorry. I gotta not be so judgmental, but there are people who like, I don't know, sort of like extreme cosplay that they're vampires and will drink human. Yeah. And will like drink human blood and stuff, but that you have to be really careful because human blood has a ton of iron in it. So you can like overdose yourself on iron. So use caution. Safe vampire activities.
Not to mention all the bloodborne pathogens that could also be of concern.
Yes. Get everybody tested. Be safe.
And then have fun. Then have a great time.
Yeah.
Don't drink too much and overdose
on
iron.
Don't hurt anybody. Yeah. Don't hurt anybody. Everybody
that doesn't want
get
to
all
be
the
hurt.
Consent that they need. Just be careful. Yes. Okay.
That's spooky science, sisters.
That's spooky science, sisters. PSA.
Safe sex. You
let your freak flag fly. You do whatever it is that you want to do. But if you want to have some freaky vampire sex and drink some blood, get
just
all the
safe.
Important tests. Be safe. Anyway, so I'd also heard, I saw porphyria referenced in several different articles, but also had it pointed out that potentially those symptoms and those characteristics are more consistent with more modern fictional interpretations. So once you hit Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, and don't necessarily mesh with traditional folklore. So that blood drinking, I guess, wasn't necessarily 100% required in order to be a vampire. So in terms of like folklore, and that sensitivity to sunlight is the same way. So I don't know how valid that is, but it's like, I guess we sort of have our own like modern folklore about it, but it's sort of one of those things. Like, yeah. I don't think anybody really believes that there are vampires today. Like, we all know that it was just people misunderstanding medical science, or that they're mythical, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I know anyone who believes in vampires.
Right. So it's sort of an interesting topic to do, because it's similar to the boogeyman, where it's like, well, nobody actually believes that the boogeyman is real.
Right.
Or most people at least don't in like Western culture. But there's pretty strong folklore roots and potentially valid medical explanations for why the stories exist. So it's interesting.
Did you read anything about why garlic? Like, why is garlic a big thing?
I read a few things and I forgot to write much down about it. I did hear that there are certain traditions where when I was learning all about the various like staking and whatever of bodies that happens to like keep people dead, that there are certain traditions where they put things in people's mouths, like in the corpse's mouth. And some of it was like some of it was to keep the person's soul in, and some of it was to let it keep it from going back in. I have no idea, but like one of the things was like people would put a bulb of garlic in people's mouths. So I don't know how common that is, but I do not know necessarily where the garlic folklore comes from. I do love garlic.
Gotcha.
Though.
Me too. So no vampires here.
And I heard sort of related, but also sort of an aside, there's like some TikToks going around, your favorite thing, Paige.
Here we go.
That The spices that are found, or some of the common spices that are found in like the pumpkin spice blend, are in like traditional sort of like witch whatever folklore, are thought to like repel evilness and repel bad spirits and stuff. So when people tell you that they hate pumpkin spice,
they're just evil.
Yeah. It just tells you something about their character.
That's good to know. That is good to know. Cut those people out. No problem.
Cut those people out.
They don't deserve me anyway.
They don't deserve me. You either like pumpkin spice or you get the fuck out. Oh, dear. Okay. So the last vampire characteristic that I wanted to just briefly mention was this idea that they can mesmerize their victims or like hypnotize their victims, which is a thing in, yeah, several things. So it's, I mean, it's a thing in the Dracula book and movie. It's definitely a thing in True Blood. They've got the glamour or whatever. Yeah. And so I don't think I realized that the word mesmerize comes from the work of a guy named Anton Mesmer, who convinced people that invisible forces like magnetism or electricity combined with the use of hypnotic trances could cure diseases. So basically that your mind could, like, in combination with some sort of like life force or energy or whatever, could cure whatever diseases you were suffering from. And there was all this controversy in the early 19th century with researchers like claiming that to demonstrate through mesmerism that things like your will or your spirit or your soul were like physical things, whereas like other people showed the opposite with whatever mesmerization research they were doing, you know, showing that the spirit determined the body's well-being. But more importantly, that timing is like convenient because that's when shortly after that we get Bram Stoker's Dracula and this idea that he can like mesmerize or hypnotize his victims. So like that's coming from this like controversy about like how much control your mind has over your physical body in terms of like healing itself and stuff. Which, you know, which is like half baloney, because like I definitely believe in like the power of suggestion, and you know, people can like make them, like, I mean, I have raging anxiety, so it's like I can definitely make myself feel terrible.
Well, yeah, it's like if you tell yourself with my enough brain too that like, oh, I don't feel good, then like you're probably not gonna feel great.
Yeah, but, and like the placebo effect is certainly a thing, but I'm not gonna like cure cancer with my mind.
Right. So like I will tell you right now that I mean, not that you don't know this already, but there are like certainly people who still believe that they can.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's, like those ideas have not gone away. So anyway.
So I think that's vampires.
So I think that's vampires, ending on a somewhat judgmental note, but that is just on brand for me.
I mean, you know what? At the end of the day, if you are able to make yourself feel better or cure some sort of illness that you had, then like more power to you.
I mean, it's tough though, because I think they do say that I think they have done studies that show like positive outlooks and stuff like that, like actually are associated with like better outcomes for people undergoing cancer treatment and stuff. So I don't know.
Maybe there's more truth to it than we think there is.
I know. Now we're back in like the randonauting world, and like how much can your mind influence things and what's happening? So I don't know. What I do know is there are no vampires. And I had to read a lot about gross things happening to corpses.
It was kind of fun though, right?
It was kind of fun. And so I was disappointed when you were like, oh, I never want to hear that groaning sound. And I was like,
I just like, I don't want to hear it in real life. Like, I don't want to be at a funeral and have a body groaning at me. Like, I'm sorry. I don't care who is in that coffin. I'm out. See ya.
Yeah. Although presumably if you're at a funeral and like the body's actually there, it's been preserved. Like it's been embalmed.
Okay, whatever.
So it's
you know
not
what I'm gonna
saying. Be like bloating up.
Maybe
at groaning.
Maybe at this funeral it is groaning at me. You don't know.
Although, side note about funeral practices, because like this is very much connected to this episode. I learned, and I can't remember which podcast it was through, but it was through a podcast that we follow, one of their social media accounts. But anyway, they had done some kind of interview or had some sort of interaction with a mortician, and they were talking about like what happens to women when they embalm them. And like things somebody asked, like, do you put a bra on them? And it was like, it was gross. It was like, it was like they basically like have to like, you know, because your boobs flop to the side when you're laying down. So they like some morticians will even like they'll put a bra on you, but they'll, I think they have to like secure it somehow, like pin it, or like some morticians will even like suture your boobs together to like get them to not flop to the side. And the point was that they shared on the social media account was like, no, like how did I never know about this? Because like I don't want to be embalmed and don't want to be buried that way. But if I were, you motherfuckers better not put a bra on me. I'd be so fucking pissed. Like, I am not spending eternity with my boobs in a bra. I spend as much of my life as possible braless.
Not in one.
Yeah, because it's just more comfortable. So, like, you better let me go to my eternal rest, like, free boob in it forever. Like, just bury me in my Christmas onesie, because that's the most comfortable piece of clothing I own.
With no, and don't you dare sew my boobs together.
Don't you dare sew my boobs together. I don't care if they're floppy. It doesn't matter.
Right. Who's looking at them anyway?
You heard it. Yeah, no one's looking at my boobs. I'm dead. Just kidding. I want to get buried in the natural, whatever, burial ground.
You're going to feed the trees.
Rot into the earth. All right. Take us out.
Well, before. Take us out. Before we wrap up, I wanted to put out one last reminder to please send us any spooky stories to our Spooky Science Sisters email or our social media accounts, and keep listening to see if you hear your story make an appearance around Halloween. But that wraps up episode 11 on vampires. Tune in next time for our discussion on the most believable hauntings. If you like this episode, hit subscribe and share with a friend. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Spooky SciPod, Facebook at Spooky Science Sisters, and at our website, SpookyScienceSisters.com. If you have any questions about previous topics or ideas for future episodes, email us at SpookyScienceSisters@gmail.com. Thanks as always for listening, and stay spooky.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.